This is a bonus edition of 16.9, the Digital Signage Podcast, with interviews from the crowded aisles and noisy hallways of Integrated Systems Europe in Amsterdam. I was at ISE last week to take in the biggest pro AV show on this planet and possibly any planet. I did a pile of sit-down interviews with different execs for full-length podcasts that you're going to hear over the next few weeks. And I also did some stand-ups that are already live. I did 8 of those, and here are the other 4. I normally get these things properly sound engineered, but in the interest of speed to market, I did these ones myself, so apologies if the sound and the levels are a little dodgy. I can guarantee you they are. In a minute, I'll dive into the first conversation, but let's get some really important information out of the way first. This podcast costs a few bucks to produce, as did the private jet that got me and my personal valet, Sedgwick, over there and back last week. So I'm very grateful for the ongoing support this podcast gets through a sponsorship by Jeremy Gavin and his crew at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. They do best-of-breed subscription content, and if you run a signage network, you really should check them out at ScreenFeed.com. All right, let's fire up the first on-floor chat with Red V from Italy. So, Stefano, how do you say your name?
Stefano.
Stefano.
Nalin.
Nalin from Enova, that's mm-hmm. the name of the company?
Yeah.
Okay. But your product is Red V or?
And Red V is another company owned 100% by Enova. So, there are two companies.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, the product
this is. This is specifically, Enova, Red V is specific for this product.
Okay.
To sell and promote and develop this product. Then Enova has and develops other kind of applications, mobile application, enterprise application,
etc. Yeah. How big is your company?
Sorry?
How big is the company?
60 person, 60 employees, yeah.
Oh, okay. So good size.
Most of them engineers, based in Italy, Venice, and Lomaz, Como, Milan.
Okay. So Venice isn't entirely a tourist town?
Yeah.
There's business going on there.
Yeah. And we have also an office in Palo Alto now.
So, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So, tell me about your, it's a digital signage platform. I was curious, we're in the Toshiba booth, and you've got this running on a Toshiba system on chip display.
Yeah, exactly.
So, tell me about that, how it works and so on.
Okay, so we have our CMS server to manage the content and the digital signage players. And
it's cloud-based.
It's cloud-based, but we can also sell licenses to install it on premises, on board of hardware owned by the customer, by our clients. And we developed this special client for a new lineup of display, business display from Toshiba, and specifically designed for embedded signage applications. We, as Enova, also developed for Toshiba, the SDK that is available to other partners.
Okay.
So we developed the SDK, better signage SDK, and a special version of our Red V product for their displays. Okay. So it supports videos, 1080p resolution, images. We also support embedded HTML, and then all the common stuff that you find in digital signage applications, like RSS feeds, news, right. Clock, weather information.
But it's running Linux, not Android, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. That's distinct from a lot of the SOC platforms out there. And you also do Android boxes, and you also work on Intel-based,
well. Raspberry Pi. Also more powerful Intel-based than NVIDIA Quadro, based on NVIDIA Quadro graphics card.
So if you want to do video walls, that kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But we also support video wall with our Android media players.
Okay.
Because they can synchronize each other.
Down to the frame?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not at the frame, but some milliseconds delay, you cannot barely notice. But it's really appreciated in most environments. We did great installations in a fashion company in Italy, Calzedonia, Tezenis, and it's a big company in Italy. It's a worldwide company. They manage their new fashion building where they have most of their fashion show. There are 18 digital signage projectors that can be played and controlled, synchronized to play very big effects on 60 meter by 15 meters wide space. Right.
Yeah. And this is a web-based player, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it can easily be ported to other platforms,
right,
as it is.
Mm-hmm. And I was, one of the things that intrigued me is there's a lot of web-based CMS companies out there offering their services to whoever's interested. You were saying that you've integrated with the ERP systems at major grocers in Europe, which I think is a pretty big distinction. So you're, maybe explain what's going on there.
Yeah, we developed with Toshiba Tech, first in Germany and then in the rest of Europe, an integration with ERP systems used in retail environments. Mm-hmm. So our customers are able to install inside the stores and display to show always up-to-date prices of their goods, their fresh goods that changes every day maybe, also with the quantity update, special prices, etc. And so once the system is configured, the owner of the shop or the manager of the shop doesn't even need to connect to to the CMS, our RedB CMS, but it just have to change the price on
the system that they're
on
working
the
with every,
they're
day
working every day
and
exactly.
updating. That's
without touching
also
the other system.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, otherwise you automatically.
So way more efficient.
Yeah.
And always accurate, or at least as accurate as the ERP system is.
Exactly.
Is that a big job to do that, or like say if I'm a potential client, I come to you and say, yeah, what you did there, I'd like to do that too.
No, it's not a big job. We just need data for we just need to know the format of the data. It can be XML, it can be JSON, or it can be any other text format. And we are able to import parses the format and display as the customer wants to display on its own displays.
So as long as the ERP system has some methodology to expose the data, put it in a kind of a safe harbor place.
Exactly.
And you can get at it. And
we download it, we parse it.
Okay.
We then show the price information.
And what if I'm asking you what's unique about your platform versus all these other ones out here, what would you say?
Everybody says that our is the most user-friendly they ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
It's designed from the base to be really user-friendly, very, very easy to use, and maybe because we started with this in mind. Maybe the other didn't. They started maybe from the player and adding more function and functions, and I don't know. I think this is the main reason, the focus of their development.
And how many clients do you have? Like, what would be your installed base in Italy and beyond?
We have an installed base in Europe from Italy, Germany, the Netherlands, and the Nordics also. These are our main countries at the moment. And we have more than 2,000, last year, more than 1,000 players in this region.
Right. And is it all sold through channel partners like a Toshiba, or do you sell direct?
Yeah, they are selling our own solution.
Okay, do you have your own direct sales as well, or?
Yeah, in Italy at the moment, only in Italy.
Mm-hmm. And are you looking for, to broaden it into other countries?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Cool, all right.
Here's our next chat with InteractiveScape from Berlin.
My name is Marcel Graf. I'm head of sales and marketing at InteractiveScape from Berlin.
Mm-hmm. And a startup company?
No, it isn't. We exist for 10 years now.
Oh, okay.
So we started building hardware ourselves, big multi-touch tables with tangible object recognition. At some point, there were very good big companies out in the market, so we stopped our hardware business and solely focused on software, where there was a big need because only few companies knew something about user experience.
Yes.
And as a result, we focused on that. We put in a content management system so that it's a seamless interaction, that it's scalable. And technology evolved, but the hardware for the tangible object recognition didn't. PCAP was coming out, capacitive touch, as on the iPhone. Very precise, very good. But the other systems were optical. And so they detect touches. When you don't touch it, they don't like light.
Right.
And so it's a mess.
It's buggy.
It's very buggy and very expensive. You spend a lot of money and still then it doesn't work.
Right.
As a result, we sold more capacitive touch screens, but a lot of clients inquired about tangible object recognition because you want to have an experience you can't have at home.
Mm-hmm. So when you say tangible object recognition, you mean a physical object?
Like a physical thing,
like
a texture, a product, something you can feel, something
right.
you can look like in real life, something that's not virtual, something you,
right.
you can only have like in real life. And but we had to say, You would need to use this optical technology, but it's a mess. So we because we have a know-how in developing hardware, we figured out a way to detect objects on capacitive touch, which we presented to the public a year ago. And the idea was that we make it public, that we show all our competitors that it is working. So this year at IC, you see a lot of competitors out there doing what we did more than a year ago. Why did we do that? Because we want to expand the market. With our Kapoor Plus technology, we developed a new object.
Right, it's a little disc, because we're listening to this, not seeing it. It's a little disc about the size of a hockey puck, but half the depth of a hockey puck.
Okay, that's very Canadian.
It is.
And the good thing is, you
Let's
don't...
say a drink coaster.
A drink coaster, yes. You don't have to touch the drink coaster.
Yes.
All the other tangible object recognition, you have to touch to some degree, because you're like a big antenna, so you change the conductivity of the PCAP sensor. But this technology, you don't have to touch. You put it on the screen, and it's being detected.
And there are electronics inside that.
There are electronics, yes.
And is it like a radio or?
There's a gyroscope in there, so we have very precise rotation. There's also like a Bluetooth emitter inside, because it emits which ID, which object it is. So opposed to other technologies, here we have unlimited different objects to be detected because the chip can output any number, whereas the other technologies, well, they have a limited set of possibilities. And when you put a lot of fingers on the screen with other technologies, you fake objects by accident.
Right.
You have false positives. With this technology, you just don't.
And the disc is mapped to this particular product, in this
yes.
case an athletic shoe.
Exactly. That's the only thing you have to do.
Right.
Besides that, you just attach any object to the disc and you're all set.
And each of these discs has almost like a MAC address.
Yes, it's a UUID.
Right, okay.
Universal Unique Identification Number, I think it's.
So what we're seeing here is essentially a demo for what somebody like a Nike or an Adidas or that kind of store might do, where they have an athletic shoe, dropping it down on a interactive touch table, and when it hits the table, not hits the table, it's put on the table, it lights up almost like a e-commerce menuing system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could you do transactions off of here in theory?
In theory, yes, you could.
Yeah. But then it gets a little more complicated.
Well, it's a question whether the company needs it, wants it, whether it's feasible. Thing here,
issues.
Demonstration is we can make any object interactive on the latest technology. It's a UHD resolution touch screen with capacitive touch, so it's almost like a big iPad.
Yeah.
You see that you don't see pixels. It's the experience you're used to, so you're not going into a store and you look at Windows 95.
Right.
So it's like really nice, neat, and you have an experience you can't have at home.
So what are you selling? Are you selling primarily the electronics technology, or are you selling the solution? Like we will develop the interactive capability
yes.
for you?
Mm-hmm. Right next
service.
To me is our interaction designer.
Mm-hmm.
So we develop the entire service. Of
okay.
course, we do have standard hardware, software, which is made to work with objects, which replies to a lot of inquiries out of the box with a content management system. But over that, we built custom software, the entire solution for the client. And for that, we rely on our hardware, because other companies were not able to deliver hardware we need.
Right.
So we have a 43-inch UHD screen, which is like a super retina resolution, and
yeah.
we are the first ones in Europe to have this.
And you are doing the hardware glass and all that to control the experience. Because if you just said, here's this part of the solution, you go buy the touch table or whatever, it's not going to be the same thing.
Yes, exactly. So we control it, so we make sure that it's working. We ship it out to clients and we know they'll be happy. Mm-hmm. It's not that there's like some cheapish touch sensor doing some stuff we're not expecting. And
what's the IP you have? Are these electronic discs your intellectual property?
Yes.
Somebody else wanted to do this, like a third-party integrator, they're going to have to license it through you.
Exactly. We built it together with the Technical University of Berlin.
Okay.
So there's a lot of new sensors inside that you can't buy on the market.
Okay, so does this come out of like an incubator or something?
Yes, an
innovation lab.
Innovation, like federal innovation program,
okay.
Which tries to connect universities to small companies in Germany.
Okay.
And so there are new sensors in there which are protected. So if you get the chip, you would like to re-engineer it, have a lot of fun. Perhaps you succeed in re-engineering it, but then try to build it in a bigger scale. And then, of course, we have the patents on it.
So everybody walking by is looking at this and going, oh, there's an RFID sensor in there. But that's
I just say yes, some sort of this. Because why should I know people with technical details if
right.
the only thing they care about is that it works for them and that they succeed with their objectives?
Are you in the field with this yet or still kind of demoing?
Well, this is a world premiere demo.
Mm-hmm.
With the other technology, we are in the field for like 2 years now.
Okay.
And we built an entire ecosystem around it.
And what would be a good example of that, like a museum or?
Museums, but products and companies who want to show their products,
mm-hmm.
Who want to make like a tangible experience, like where you want to meet people and have engineers who want to touch a small sample, want to feel the texture, but also a color company which uses it to engage people in the conversation of mixing colors. So what is their business about? So you have a color wheel where you can select the color and then see how it matches the different houses.
Right.
So this is out in the field. Some other robotics companies are using it to show how their robot works. The mobility company uses it to visualize the transportation options of the future. So you have a map of Berlin and you can just put like a roadblock onto the map or move that or just a congestion area or visualize different things with these objects in an intuitive way, because it's not an interface you have to think how far it works. It's just like you put it there, you see it, you understand it.
Right. The discs that are on the bottom of these demonstration shoes or on bottle of wine, that sort of thing. Do you have any sense of commercial cost of that? So let's say a malt whiskey distillery in Scotland wanted to have a demo with three of these things. Are these like €100 each or?
Okay. Well, I can't disclose that now. It will be a thing of numbers. Right now, we have to check how many we will produce.
Right.
But I think in the whiskey distillery case, the company will spend much more money on figuring out what they actually want.
Right.
Writing a concept, creating the user experience.
This is not the deal killer of the disc. It's just one little element of it.
Yes, it's actually the deal enabler, because back then you had to control the entire light environment, and you had to make sure that there's no window, that there's no infrared light, that everybody regularly you're checking on the IT installation. With this, you just don't. I ship it, I don't hear from the client again.
Yeah.
I only hear from them if they want to make an update or.
You have a very busy booth, so there looks like there's a lot of people interested in this.
Yes, today is actually a rather calm day.
Yeah.
The last 2 days were very busy. So what is also very nice is that all touch manufacturers came by and they would like to work with us. and it's
that's good. More salespeople. More salespeople that way.
Yes, and of course.
All right, thank you for your time.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Here's the third one with Airport Labs from Romania.
My name is Liju. I'm the founder of the company called Airport Labs. We started operating in January 2015. I personally have about 12 years experience in the aviation business, mostly on the client side in building and designing airports.
Okay.
I did a lot of work with Abu Dhabi government in their expansion programs. We have a team of 24 people so far, mostly engineers, everything up to PhD engineers. Which between them, you know, they have an average of 10-15 years in the web technologies and cloud-based technologies. We have always developed, also in our previous companies where we worked, we developed large scalable systems that catered for the public. I realized in 2014-2015 when I was working for the Midfield Terminal building that the systems on the market are not what they should be given the state of technology right now. So I decided to take a leap of faith and start a company that is truly going to disrupt this market by using effectively what is already on the market in terms of technologies. It's just that the airports haven't implemented it.
Right.
Initially, we started with a mobile app. It's called the Airport Community App. It's implemented about 15 airports right now, and we're already rolling it out to about 140 airports. It's one of the first, if not the first, staff app, and it makes information available for the staff that are on the ground, right? Anything from flight schedule to disruption to any kind of problems, any kind of like gate changes, or typical operation, right? It has been very popular. On the back of that, we decided that if we have a clear and real-time communication channel to the staff, we should build a communication channel for the passengers. That's how we developed our FID solution, Vision Air, which we're demonstrating today with our partner NEC. The solution is cloud-based. It requires minimum connectivity in the airport. For large airports, obviously, we integrate with their data sources. For very small airports, we can do the integration in the cloud for them, so it makes it even easier for them to deploy the solution. The solution is entirely based in, runs in a browser, and it does all the advanced stuff that you would expect the FIDS and media solution to do. Like, for example, it can do sync playback of media and also sync changes. We call it a total passenger communication platform because it does more than just FIDS, right? We do first the FIDS and everything that is related to flight information, but we can also do disruption management, intelligent wayfinding.
Disruption. What do you mean by disruption management?
When there is, we can start with the bad cases where there's any kind of security threat, right? And you have to evacuate the terminal.
Okay.
The solution can be used to evacuate the terminal. And not only we understand what the screens are, but we also understand their orientation, and we display it on a map for the administrators, right? So if you want to define an evacuation point, that screens will turn and show arrows towards the evacuation points in the quickest time possible. But also more regular things like train delays, strikes, anything that might impact operations, ATC
right,
strikes,
like, flight, yeah, whatever.
So that's very good. Also, we do media and targeted media. Since we understand who the passengers are, how many passengers they are, and also where they come, where they're going, right? We can offer the airport the possibility of publishing relevant media to the relevant screens. Right? This increases the revenue for the airports. Right? Also, in terms of increasing revenue and decreasing cost, the solution has a very interesting multi-user back-end administration. So the airport can define certain screens, certain classes of screens, where they relinquish control to the either ground handlers, the airlines, or the concessionaires, right? Which allows them to get the revenue out of those screens without having the actual overhead of managing them.
Right.
However, in a case of disruption, in a case of messages that they want to publish, operational messages that they want to publish, they have control over the over those screens. They can talk over control.
I get the impression that from the outside, it would seem like doing FIDS displays is no big deal. You're just getting data and showing on a screen. But it sounds like you've been able to get to where you're at very rapidly because you actually know the airport business.
Yes, that is correct. And just displaying FIDs shouldn't be, that should be a commodity, that should be a given, right?
Right.
What people should be focusing now is about how they can get extra revenue out of that skinny real estate. And they can do that either by advertising, as I mentioned earlier, but also by doing stuff like, for example, you want to increase your footfall into the duty-free area, right?
Yeah.
Airports and airports that have a good grasp of the operations, they know that every minute spent in the duty-free area can increase the revenue, right? So it's up to us as a company to show the right information, the right gate information at the right time by keeping the people, and that way keeping the people more time into the retail area. Right? How do we do that? We have a solution called Laminar, which understands the flow of passengers and collects data from the ground. Right. This way we accelerate the transition from the check-in into the retail area and also make sure that we keep the people there for the longest time possible without having them missing their flights.
Right.
We implemented this solution in Dubai less than a year back, right? And we already demonstrated Dubai, which is mainly a transfer airport. We already demonstrated that we reduced their queue times at transfer from 8 minutes to about 4.5 minutes, right? This is tremendous, tremendous impact for their operation, right? And everything. So the queue and flow management Laminar also integrates with our display system Visionaire to guide people to the shortest queues, to tell them how much time they have to expect, increasing the passenger satisfaction, but also with our mobile app where we can send alerts to the staff, we can send predictive alerts to the staff, queues never form.
And you said there's 7,000 screens in Dubai?
There are about 6,000 screens in Dubai right now. We have also about 1,000 screens in Gatwick, right? So right now we're controlling a real estate of about 7,000 screens with the Visionaire solution.
So you went from startup, and a year later you were in one of the busiest airports in the world.
That is correct. That is correct. It's
how did you do that?
Well, it's worth noting that we have a very good product, very competitive product, right? It seems to, we haven't found the limits of it yet, right? Meaning that whatever the operations came to us and said, you know, we thought about doing this or we thought about doing that. We are very quick to react to them, and the system adapts very well. We're mainly a research and development company, so we work with the airports directly. We don't want to sell them a product. We want to build a partnership with them about making the operation more efficient. Also, how we price our product is very competitive and gives the airport trust, right? We typically charge per number of passengers, right? So we tell the airport, listen, you have this number of passengers, we're going to charge you this dollar amount for it, right? We don't care how many screens you deploy, we don't care how many companies you have, we don't care how you run your operation, right? However, we have a vested interest for your passengers number to grow. And the only way it can grow is by making operations more efficient. Right? We also share the risk, right? If there's another 2008 where the traffic has dropped dramatically, we are going to be there without partners to share the risk.
Interesting. Huh. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And here's the last one with Nodark from Sweden.
My name is Anders Peterson. I'm one of the founders of Nodark out of Sweden.
Mm-hmm. And where in Sweden?
We're Gothenburg.
Okay.
So we are a digital signage developer and a company, and we do a cloud-based digital signage solution.
How long have you been doing it?
We've been doing it for almost 3 years.
Okay. And we're, you know, you're not an old guy, but
no.
I see some silver hair there. So
yeah.
How did you end up in this?
I used to work with marketing resource management systems, mm-hmm. or content management systems,
okay.
in general. And we saw that in the digital signage business, it comes a lot out of programming, template-based creation, a lot of hands-on work, and in the sort of CRM business, MRM business, it's a lot more sort of user-friendliness, more let the system do a lot for you instead of you as a user having to administrate a lot,
right.
so to say. So that's sort of the take that we have on this, is to have our system do a lot more for the customer, instead of the customer having to do everything, all the details and everything themselves.
Right, so very low learning curve to get up to speed.
Low learning curve, adapt our system to the customer's existing way of working. As an example, one of the first things we made is a PowerPoint plugin that you install directly into PowerPoint that communicates with our system and onwards to the players. Instead of having a user create something in PowerPoint or already tapping into what they have in PowerPoint and then converting it piece by piece and uploading it to something completely different, like a template-based creation tool.
Right.
That you can go directly from what you already have in PowerPoint and push that out to the players without having to stop in between. So
does it require a lot more learning, extra training and so on to work with it?
I would say no. Since it's the basic operation is drag and drop oriented,
yeah.
So it's intuitive and easy for somebody to learn the basic steps.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, which we're very proud of, is a live view, which means that when you're in the cloud tool, so to say, administrating the players, and you push live view, it will send you like a direct feed of exactly what the player is showing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the competition, they settle for sending one screen dump, so you can click a button and you can see,
screen, exactly. Right.
And what we can provide then is that you press play on live view and then you can see, okay, this is what the player is doing in Italy. Mm-hmm. I'm in Gothenburg in Sweden and I can see exactly what that is happening. And that also helps a lot when working with the content, I think.
And if there's an issue in Italy, how do you deal with it?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, it's completely remote controlled. The clients are Linux-based, which means that we've built in back-end options so we can control the device, reboot it, everything basically that you expect to be able to do with the device, you can do that.
Okay.
Also, if God forbid something were to happen with the player that it's still hardware can fail. If you reinstall, we've got the quick replace functionality, so you enter the serial number of the original one, the one that broke, enter the serial number of the new replacement device,
right.
And one click, and the system does everything else, setting up everything, importing all the content and everything as you had it,
right.
Which means that because we work with arenas, etc., the downtime, and we were talking about minutes maximum that they need in order to get back online, so to say. So that's some examples of what we do.
And it's software as a service?
Software as a service, definitely.
And is your marketplace small to medium business, or do you go after a particular vertical?
We would say that we go I would say medium-sized companies, also small maybe, but the companies that want to work actively with their content. If you want to have a stationary content, okay, here's a time schedule that, or an image or presentation right. that goes and goes and never updates.
There's five pieces of media. We're going to play these over and over again for the next month.
That's other players can do that as well. And you can bottom line do that with a USB memory stick and a Windows computer. But if you want to be like actively update the content, then I would say that we have the solution for that.
What about working with live data? Could you do that as well? So if you have data cells within PowerPoint or something?
Definitely. So one of the you can definitely work with a lot of API content. Yeah, we work with SAP integrations. We do Microsoft
for your customers, or
we do that for the customers and integrate it,
because that would be kind of scary for them we're going to integrate with SAP.
But also, if we talk about dynamic content, one thing that we have is that all the players that we have, both the tablet versions and the stationary clients, they have built-in web servers. which means that you can take any HTML5 content, zip that into a zip file, and just add it onto a player as you would with an image, movie, or presentation. The player will unpack the zip file and play the content locally, which means that you can very, very easily create any kind of interactive media, time schedules, anything, and you can of course link that HTML content to fetch data from somewhere else.
So this is the whole idea of this IoT world where any device can become a server and you can interact directly with it rather than going back up to the cloud.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're also doing things like lighting control systems?
We do that as well. So we've integrated it with two providers at the moment. So first of all, Philips Hue. So all the Philips Hue products, you can control the light through the players. You can say that when we show an image, like a movie file of some red strawberries, for example, then you can control the light, so the light is red. And we have some examples where we have store advertising, so like storefronts.
Yeah.
And we have a company selling eyeglasses. So when they show on the LED screens in the window, red glasses.
Yeah.
Then the lighting around the screen is red, but also at night what they do is that they do like light show at night when the store is closed. So when they show then the blue glasses on the screens, the lighting in the store goes blue.
Oh really? Okay.
So it's very eye-catching and very cheap way to create like a visual effect.
And 3-year-old company, how many people involved with the company?
We're 5 people.
Uh-huh.
And as I said, I mean, we've been in the CRM, MRM business for a long time. So we've been able to do a lot in a short period of time.
Yeah.
But we still got a very, very long to-do list of things that we want to do.
Right.
But we've already done so much in terms of functionality.
Yes.
As I also said, worth mentioning, I don't know if anybody else has this, but that you can send emails directly to our players with what you write in the header of the email.
Yeah.
Will scroll in the lower part of the screen.
So for let's say the front desk of a corporation, you can enable the person who works the reception desk to, you know, type in "Welcome, Mr. Smith."
Yes.
That sort of thing without having to know anything about the CMS.
Yeah, and we also have sort of the standard corporate setup where they put screens in the canteen or whatever in the company, and somebody wants to forward the message, okay, 3:00 meeting, these and these people, then you can just send that as an email directly to the player. And in the system, you then define how long that right. every time somebody sends an email, how long time should that scroll, etc.
So in theory, you have a screen in the cafeteria. You could send an email saying, "Anders, get your ass back to the office."
Definitely, definitely. Nice feature. Definitely.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Nice talking to you.
That's it for this special episode of the 69 Podcast from ISC in amazing Amsterdam. I hope you enjoyed the conversations and that you learned a few things. I'm Dave Haynes. Thanks for listening.